When the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply come, longing just to bring something that's of worth, that will bless your heart.
Hi, this is Chaplains Timothy Burdick
and Stephanie Burdick,
and we'd like to welcome you to the Visions of Love podcast, reaching out to the spiritually and physically blind throughout the world.
You search much deeper within, through the way things appear. You're looking into my heart. I'm coming back to the heart of worship, and it's all about you. It's all about you, Jesus. I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I've made it. When it's all about you, it's all about you, Jesus.
Welcome to our podcast, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to start today's episode with some music provided by Timothy on the recorder and yours truly on the keyboard. Our special guests today are Chris St. John and Kathy Herod. Kathy and Chris are the president and vice president of advancement, respectively, at the Center for Arizona Policy, also known as CAP. They will be talking with us about the Equality Act and the ramifications of what will happen if that act passes into law. Please enjoy our show, and thank you for listening. Thank you.
to contact us, all you need to do is go to mynvm.com.
NVM is an acronym for New Vision Ministries.
If you want to contact us, there's a contact form on the website. Or if you don't know Christ or need prayer, please call 507-369-6861. Thank you.
And now for part one of our interview with Kathy Herod and Chris St. John.
Chris and Kathy are going to join us today. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Chris?
Sure. I'm Chris St. John. I'm with Center for Arizona Policy, and I'm also the executive director of our initiative that we call the Arizona Capital Project. And I'm also here with our president, and I'll let her introduce herself.
And I'm Kathy Herod, and it's my privilege to serve as president of Center for Arizona Policy.
Well, thank you so much. Today we're going to talk about the Equality Act. Can you guys go ahead and tell us a little bit about that, please?
Sure. Our civil rights laws, both at the federal government level and the state and city levels, we have civil rights laws that protect people from discrimination based on groups. We call them protected classes in the law. So traditionally, since certainly the 60s, we've had laws that say you cannot discriminate against someone simply because of the color of their skin, or because they're female, or because they're handicapped, or they're aged, or because of their marital status. So we have protected groups of people from being discriminated against and said that that was illegal discrimination. So what the Equality Act is about is adding to those protected classes the categories of sexual orientation and gender identity. And so what that would mean is that you cannot discriminate against someone because they classify, because they identify as being homosexual. To use the common term today, LGBT, and some other letters get added onto it, but lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. So you would not be able to discriminate. And these are usually in the areas of housing, employment, and public accommodation, that you would not be able to discriminate.
Well, that sounds good, but how would that affect our daily lives?
It would have a dramatic impact on many, many different areas of life. And so one way to think of it is in terms of none of us agree that you should discriminate on someone simply because they're African American, simply because they're Hispanic, or simply because they're Caucasian. So and most of us think that if you discriminate against someone simply because they're a black man or a black woman, that you're a racist bigot. Well, so this would be if you're found to discriminate against someone because they're gay or transgender, then you're the equivalent of a racist bigot. But there are a lot of different ways that it would start to impact our daily lives that I think people don't always aware of. One of the best examples I can use, many are familiar with Jack Phillips, the cake baker with Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado, Baronelle Sussman, the florist in Washington State. And let me just share Baronelle's story for a brief minute. Baronelle is a grandmother in the state of Washington. She's had Arlene's Flowers for many years. For 9 years, Baronelle created custom flower arrangements with a man named Rob Ingersoll. Rob and Baronelle, you know, had a very friendly relationship, you know, had a lot of fun designing these really beautiful flower arrangements. Rob walks into Baronelle's shop one day, and he asks her to do the flowers for his wedding to a man. Baronelle very lovingly said, "Rob, you know, I love you, but because of my faith in Jesus Christ, I cannot do the flowers for your wedding to a man." That Baronelle believes the biblical definition of marriage, that marriage is only the union of one man and one woman. So Rob and Baronelle hugged that day. Rob left. Well, I should say Baronelle said, "Here are three other florists that would do the flowers for your wedding." Then the next thing Baronelle knew, she was charged by the Attorney General of the state of Washington with violating that state's non-discrimination law, that she had discriminated against Rob because he was a gay man. And the contention that I would say, and that we all say, is that Baronelle was not discriminated against Rob because he was a gay man. It was an event that she could not participate in because of her faith in Jesus Christ. It was an event, a wedding, that she could not participate in. So this has nothing to do with discrimination. Yet, Baronelle lost her lawsuit, and at the end of June, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to take her case. And so right now, Burnell is guilty of illegally discriminating against someone because she would not do flowers for a same-sex wedding. So when you talk about how this would affect day-to-day life, that's just one example. That if you are someone who is serving weddings, whether it's the cake baker, the photographer, in Arizona we had a calligrapher and an artist that designed wedding invitations, that it's very real that some of those people, like Burnell, you have to decide whether you're going, you no longer can live and work according to your faith. So you have a decision to make whether you're going to preserve your livelihood or follow your faith. And so this is being faced by adoption agencies, by a number of different, in a number of different arenas.
What are the ramifications as far as adoption agencies, people who do abortions, people, other medical facilities, so forth, and colleges?
There are many ramifications. Let's take the healthcare industry to begin with. For many years, since abortion was tragically legalized in our country, doctors, healthcare professionals, our laws have protected what we call their rights of conscience. So Arizona has been very strong in this regard, so that if a doctor or a nurse or any healthcare professional does not want to participate in providing or performing an abortion because of their beliefs, because of their conscience, then the law protects them. They cannot be forced to perform an abortion or provide an abortion. The Equality Act on the national level would, in all likelihood, you know, could do away with that absent a court decision. The Equality Act would require that doctors, counselors would have to violate their conscience to prescribe, for example, puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and even sex reassignment surgery to otherwise healthy children that are struggling with their gender identity. So the Equality Act could dictate to healthcare professionals like doctors that you have to provide care for, say, a 14-year-old girl that wishes to transition to being a boy, regardless of what your beliefs are, regardless of whether you believe that puberty blockers are harmful in the long term to those individuals. Well, some interesting issues on colleges are going on. You take a dormitory, you send your child off to college, and they are going to live in a dorm. And say it's your daughter, your 18-year-old daughter, and she draws a roommate that is a male that professes to be female, and so they're transgendered. They identify as a woman, and your daughter has just drawn a biological male as her roommate at her local university. That's one example. The other thing, of course, is on women's sports. What is kind of going on throughout the country, and we've had this in Arizona as well, is that if you have a male that identifies as a female, so they now consider themselves to be a female, and they play women's sports, then you have just done away with women's sports. Best example of this happened in Connecticut, where you had three young girls in high school who were track stars. They were winning track meets. They were setting records. All was going well. Then two young boys, young males, decided to identify as female, and they started running in track meets, and they started defeating the girls. And so the girls literally had no chance to win in a track meet because of the biological males identifying as female. We've seen this in softball. We've seen it in soccer. And so, you know, in this country, there's something called Title IX that was a breakthrough in providing opportunities for girls in sports. And the number of girls who now play sports throughout high school, throughout college, has significantly increased because of Title IX, providing funding, providing opportunities for girls. If we allow, as a country, biological males to participate in girls' sports, we will be doing away with all of the progress that has been done by Title IX.
Well, what would happen to what we traditionally call public access?
Public accommodation. Some examples of that, you take the city of Mesa recently has passed what one of these non-discrimination ordinances. It's the similar to the Equality Act, but on the local city level. So you take the local public swimming pool that's by the city of Mesa swimming pool. You take your 10-year-old daughter to, you know, have an outing at the Mesa swimming pool. And because you can't discriminate against people based on their gender identity, you could have a biological male identifying as a female in the swimming pool locker room at the local swimming pool. So, you know, as far as like, you know, telling your daughter to go ahead and go into the restroom to change clothes or whatever, there could be a biological male in that restroom. So the Equality Act, the local ordinances, they really are a threat to women's privacy and safety. And, you know, certainly there's the concern about the perpetrator, the criminal that would identify as a female just to get access. But this is, you know, aside from that concern, which is a significant concern, there's also the concern about just basic women's privacy, that women deserve to be able to go into a locker room, a bathroom, any type of a changing facility, knowing that their privacy is going to be respected. In the city of Anchorage, Anchorage said that a biological male identifying as a female had to be granted access to a female domestic violence shelter. So you have a woman who has been abused, who has been the subject of domestic violence, and sleeping a few feet away from her in the domestic violence shelter would be a biological male identifying as a female. That woman's privacy has just been violated in just unfathomable ways. So women's privacy and safety, girls' sports, you know, many, many consequences to these laws.
And this will play out straight into ministries that also have battered women's shelters and things like that. You know, Massachusetts has a story of that as well, with regard to their changing rooms, restrooms, even their living facilities for vulnerable women. So this isn't limited to city-owned facilities as well. This will touch ministries as well. All
about you. That concludes part one of this interview. We hope that you're enjoying it. And please stay tuned for part two of this interview in 2 weeks. Thank you.
Hope you've enjoyed this, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless you.